words, when Frank Sinatra died 2 years ago, his FBI files became available to the public under the Freedom of Information Act. There was plenty to read, more than 1,000 pages of documents, including previously secret FBI memos and surveillance reports, as well as decades of newspaper clippings. Two brothers, both journalists, examined the Sinatra FBI files and wrote a book about them, NPR's Alex Chadwick reports.
All of me, why not take all of me?
Frank Sinatra recorded this song at about the same time that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover began snooping on him. Hoover started a file on Sinatra in 1943 and added to it for almost 30 years until Hoover's death in 1972. By the time Sinatra died in 1998, the file was a bulging 1,275 pages. After the singer's death, Tom and Phil Kuntz got copies of the Sinatra files from the FBI.
My name's Tom Kuntz, and I'm co-editor of the Sinatra files, the secret FBI dossier.
And I'm Phil Kuntz, I'm Tom's brother and also co-editor of the book.
Phil reports for the Wall Street Journal here in Washington. Tom edits a column at the New York Times. The Kuntz brothers pored over the FBI files and organized them. They did some careful editing and wrote narrative links so the FBI material would read like a story. It begins during World War II with an accusation that Frank Sinatra bribed his way out of military service.
Somebody wrote an anonymous letter to Walter Winchell, a prominent journalist of the time, and said that the FBI was investigating whether or not Sinatra had paid $40,000 to get out of the draft. The FBI was investigating no such thing, but the letter was passed on to Hoover by Winchell, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they started investigating whether or not he had paid $40,000 to dodge the draft. It turned out he hadn't done that. He had an injury at birth that caused a punctured eardrum. The draft board doctors eventually found that his punctured eardrum was plenty enough to disqualify him from the draft.
Of course, the FBI opened files on a lot of people, but Sinatra was hated. He had avoided the draft while many other young men were off fighting for American democracy. That embittered a lot of people.
This guy not only doesn't have to go to war, but everywhere he goes, there are crowds of women yelling and screaming and trying to get his attention.
Adoring him. He did, however, go overseas and entertain the men. At the very tail end of the war, he went to Italy and sang for them. And he also put out V-discs, which were recordings specially made to be sent overseas to the men on the front lines.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. I want to be there, boy, and spread some joy when they take old Berlin.
After this investigation of the draft allegations is concluded, does the FBI say, hey, this Sinatra, he's a stand-up guy, he's clean, we're going to leave him alone? Tom?
No, the FBI and Sinatra were in many ways made for each other. It was a paranoid time in the post-war era with communist hysteria and what have you. And Sinatra was a man who didn't much care what people thought, and so he kept inviting the FBI scrutiny first for his leftist affiliations and then for his mob associations.
They never get the goods on either charge. If guilt by association were a crime, he certainly would be in jail. The man hung out with a lot of very questionable figures. And especially later on, as you got to the 60s, he's hanging out with very prominent top-of-the-line mobsters while also cozying up with Jack Kennedy.
At the time you're speaking of, John Kennedy apparently has a mistress, or rather is sharing a mistress, with the Chicago mobster Sam Giancana.
Judith Campbell was introduced to Jack Kennedy at a show, a Rat Pack show in Las Vegas in about February of 1960 while the Rat Pack was filming Ocean's 11. They later became an item, Kennedy and Judith Campbell. Hoover was watching Sinatra so closely and Kennedy so closely at that time that within 3 weeks of Kennedy meeting Judith Campbell, Hoover got a memo that said Kennedy had been compromised with a woman that he met in Las Vegas at the Sands. Then, later on, Judith Campbell comes to the attention of the FBI because she's also hanging out with Giancana and Johnny Roselli, a couple of fairly well-known Chicago mobsters. Hoover starts watching Judith Campbell and finds out, lo and behold, she's also calling President Kennedy's secretary. he jots off a memo to Robert Kennedy saying, listen, I just thought you'd want to know that this woman, Judith Campbell, is simultaneously hanging out with Johnny Roselli, Sam Giancana, and is calling the president's secretary. Now, we don't know why she's calling the president's secretary, but we thought you'd want to know this.
The memos show that the mob was trying to use Sinatra to gain entree to Senator and then President Kennedy so that they could get the Kennedy White House to get the Justice Department to go easy on the mob.
But by 1962, it was obvious that the Justice Department wouldn't go easy on the mob. And Sam Giancana was furious with the Kennedys and Frank Sinatra because he thought they owed him something.
The documents show how unhappy Giancana was. He felt he wasn't getting his money's worth. He felt he had helped provide support for Kennedy's, get out the vote support for Kennedy's election, and that he wasn't getting any payback.
Sinatra did agree to stage a series of shows, along with his pals Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr., at a Chicago-area nightclub.
The FBI files focus on this 1962 gig at the Villa Venice.
Which is a club that's, well, it's run by mobsters.
It was run by mobsters.
It's since burned down, but it was...
This is probably often the case with clubs run by mobsters.
It was a mob-run outfit in late 1962. The Rat Pack did this gig either for free or for peanuts. As a favor to Sam Giancana. And listening to the CD, you can even hear Dean Martin singing parody lyrics to The Lady is a Tramp, in which he jokes about not getting paid for the gig. And a lot of people in the audience seem to get the joke.
I love Chicago. It's carefree and gay. I'd even work here without any pay. I'll lay you out. It turns out that way. That's why this gentleman is a tramp.
The Rat Pack's nightclub appearances drew crowds and money to a nearby gambling parlor run by the mob, according to the FBI files. J. Edgar Hoover kept up the surveillance of Frank Sinatra and Sam Giancana and continued to send periodic reports to the Attorney General, who apparently warned his brother to keep his distance from both Sinatra and Judith Campbell.
It may sound a little far-fetched to say Hoover did us all a favor by doing that, but there's two ways to look at these memos that he was writing to Robert Kennedy. One is that he was trying to protect his job. Hoover was a master. I mean, you know, he served through several presidents. None dared fire him because of all the things that he knew. On the other hand, somebody needed to tell the president's brother, the attorney general, what his brother was up to, because his presidency could have been wrecked by either Judith Campbell or by Sam Giancana.
Phil Kuntz and his brother Tom Kuntz are co-editors of the book The Sinatra Files, The Life of an American Icon Under Government Surveillance. This is Alex Chadwick, NPR News.
That's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up.